Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Friday, and you know what that means. Takes on Takes here on the Prospects and Props podcast. Chris Schubert, Jamie Eisner here with you once again on the show. Our favorite time of the week. We hand over the producer's mic to you. You provide the takes. We provide the reactions. Jamie, I know you love to not take a peek at the takes ahead of time, so your reactions are completely natural to the takes as I read them, and we've got some fun ones here today. I have a feeling that in yesterday's show, I think we combined used five of our six timeouts. We might use all six today.
I
think we might use all six today based on some of the takes that I have here. But let's jump right into it. Our first take here from Carl. Take: injury history should be taken into account when rating a player on overall lists. For example, Tua and Lamar have both missed significant time over the past few seasons, pushing them down significantly on my QB list in comparison to where some would put them.
I can argue both sides of this, which, again, is, I guess, not the point of this episode.
Thanks for coming to Takes on Takes and playing the middle.
I'll say it with this. I'll start with this before I give my answer. What I have done in the past when I've been asked to rank lists or whatever in, like, our TDN Premium Discord or watch-alongs or anything else is I've used injury history as a tiebreaker. If I had two players at a very similar skill set in my mind, I would defer to the player that had a more startling health history than one that did not. I guess the spirit of this take is really about whether or not you should rank players significantly lower because of their injury history. And my argument would be it depends on the list. Are you doing a list of most talented players or a list of best players? Because I think that's two different questions. Because I think you don't need to account for injuries as much when you're just talking about pure talent versus best. But I guess, Chris, you're going to want me to answer this question or answer this take.
Yes, I am.
I would say that I do think it needs to be used a little bit more. But I do worry that it gets misapplied or counted multiple times. Like, I do feel like that, like, in a vacuum, yes, it's a factor. I mean, what's the old cliche? Your best ability is your availability.
Sure.
But I do wonder if it just ends up getting used if we say, oh, yeah, you have to account for injury history. That just pushes down anybody that has a major injury history. Because, like, to me, I would not start – like, let me give you this example, Chris, because we talk about quarterbacks, and he brings up Lamar Jackson. Even though that he's had an injury history, and this other quarterback I'm going to mention doesn't, I'm not ranking Kirk Cousins above Lamar Jackson.
Not happening. Not in a million years.
NFL list.
Not happening.
I still think it should be used as a tiebreaker. I still think it matters. But I fear that when this gets brought up, it gets brought up to artificially push somebody way down the list.
Yeah.
And my issues, by the way, with Tua, just to bring this up, obviously injuries are a factor, but it's also like we saw this one season. I think that part's getting completely glossed over in the concussion discussion that surrounded Tua is that he still doesn't have enough volume for us to really definitively say what he is as a quarterback.
Yeah, look, I echo a lot of the sentiments that you had there, Jamie, but like the list itself matters, right? I was just doing my roster rankings for 2023, right? And when discussing groups for positions, like if a player was coming off of an injury and we had questions on what version of them they were going to be in 2023, that factored into where I put them. So I depends on the list on whether or not I'm putting injury history into account. But I think I think it might be more of a straw man example, but I think it's a fair one. Nobody on planet Earth is taking Kirk Cousins over Lamar Jackson if they need to win one game in, you know, to save their life. They're taking Lamar Jackson because he's a difference maker, right? And because the game would probably be in prime time and Kirk Cousins wouldn't play well. But
Chris, on that point, if I could stop you for a second, but that's where it comes back to: what is the point of the list?
Right. What the list is attempting to define absolutely matters whether or not I'm going to take history into account.
But this is where I say I think when you start to define that we need to put a a finite number or a exact piece of information based on injury where I think this gets double counted, because we already factor this stuff in. I think we already use injury as a tiebreaker subconsciously when we're making these lists. So if I said, give me the top, because here's where I say that, like, this argument or this take makes sense in a vacuum, but doesn't necessarily apply the way I think people think it does when we actually do it. Name me a quarterback list that you would make right now that would change significantly in your rankings if we said, well, account for injuries more. Who are you now ranking above Lamar Jackson that you wouldn't have ranked above him before? So I feel like we're already accounting for this when we make these lists, that we don't have to like overtly say it. I think we're subconsciously already talking about it. Because if Lamar had played 16 or 17 games every season, we're talking about him like we talk about Joe Burrow and Josh Allen. Maybe not like Mahomes, because Mahomes is in a class of his own, but we're talking about him in that next tier.
100%.
The only reason why we're not is because of the injuries, and that doesn't change if we start accounting for injuries more.
Right.
We already are doing
it. We're already doing it. It's already kind of baked into to the number. This next take here from the Sports Nut, and it is apparently a tattle take, because he says take, and then he has pasted in a tweet, and the tweet comes from the four-man rush. This tweet was from 4 days ago, Jamie, so it's very recent. Okay. Running back rookie contracts should have options after year two. Problem solved.
All right. So I'm glad that we have this time, because I wanted to talk about this running back stuff for a little bit now. Look, multiple things can be true simultaneously. The fact that RBs are kind of getting jobbed is very true. But there's nothing that we can reasonably do about it that I think makes any sort of sense. And here's why.
This suggestion, just real quick, Jamie, this suggestion is, and I mean this with the utmost of respect, it's laughable, this suggestion. Laughable. Yeah, to put a specific contract limit on a position group that would have to be put in the CBA and agreed to by the Players Association. Not in a million years is the Players Association going to agree to this.
Oh, well, no, of course they're not. And also, by the way, there's a lot of things wrong with this. One, the fact is why would they take guaranteed four-year rookie contracts and then make them half the length? That there's no chance that they would do that. Two, when we start narrowing, and I know they've gotten away with it when we have the franchise tag conversation, but when we start narrowing down to these specific position provisions, you're going to see some tomfoolery. Because if this were to be, let's say Chris is, and I'll get back to my argument in a second, but sure. if we were to take this take and make this a suggestion for this year.
Okay.
If I'm the Falcons or the Lions, I'm listing Bijan Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs as wide receivers. What's stopping me? Explain what's stopping me from listing them as wide receivers.
I mean, there's nothing stopping you from doing it. Yes, I think that's the.
So you're gonna end up. So why would T? You know what I mean? I think this would probably hurt the position more than anything, because you could talk about teams not wanting to spend higher capital on a Bijan or Jahmyr Gibbs, knowing they have to only really have 2 years of guarantee instead of four, or I guess 2 years and an option versus four and an option.
Right. You think all of a sudden that's going to mean more running backs get drafted in the first round? You think that means more running backs get high dollar contracts?
No, it's less. Which means they're going to get less money up front and still have the same issue.
Also, if they have options after year two, what does that look like? Isn't that not just exactly the situation that the Giants find themselves in with Saquon Barkley right now, just 2 years earlier?
This take also is just really
laughable. It's the word
asinine.
Laughable is the word that I use.
Another reason. There's a fundamental misunderstanding of why this is happening. And all of the solutions that I have seen rarely actually address the very simple issue that we have here. There is a supply oversurge. That is the issue that we have here. There is a supply and demand ratio that is completely out of whack, which is what's causing this. It's not a talent issue. So a running back, let's play the scenario where a running back is 2 years and then tagged. Let's just play this asinine scenario out.
Right.
Okay. They're still not going to get paid in year four.
Right.
This is not an issue of people don't think Josh Jacobs is talented. This is not an issue of people don't think Saquon Barkley is talented. This is an issue of on a per dollar basis, there are a glut of available options that they can get for cheaper than paying even an elite running back at the position.
And the opportunity cost of what those dollars could get you at another position that is more important in today's NFL.
Correct. So this is not an issue of talent, or it's not an issue of talent in the way people are thinking about it. So overall, and I think that all ties into my overall argument here, which is the problem is people are trying to solve a problem that is not solvable in the current state, because one of two things has to happen. And one of them would be a crazy change to the sport. And the second one has to happen naturally. So we can't just legislate it. The first one is just say no more salary cap. Take the salary cap away. People aren't going to have issues paying running backs.
Right.
But that's not going to happen.
Never going to happen.
Two, over time, there needs to be a shift in where the most talented athletes start playing. And when the most talented athletes start playing at different positions and there are less talented running backs available, naturally over time, running back will then become a more scarce resource. The issue now is not that people don't want to pay talent. It's that there is too much talent available, which drives down the overall cost of talent, which makes people not want to spend money even on the top end talent. That is what we have. This is a supply demand issue.
NFL Econ 101 with Jamie Eisner coming to masterclass near you.
That's what we're dealing with. And it's frustrating to me of this, like, we're missing there's no level of legislation that you're going to have on the league circles that's going to change this, because their problem isn't what people seem to believe it is.
Well, and let's look at this example. If they have options after 2 years, after year two, there's an option. What would that be? Instead of a fifth year option, it would be a third year option. Is that the argument here?
Correct.
So instead of
so if you have a third year option, tagged a fourth year,
right,
you're still having the same problem, but you're having the same problem 2 years sooner.
Instead of being tagged after year four, like you're Saquon Barkley, you're tagged after year two. Like, you've just expedited the problem. And if I'm a team and I'm drafting a guy in the first round at a position that I know, because of this rule and legislatively, I'm only going to get 2 years out of before I have to.
Wait, I'm never drafting a running back in the first
round. I'm never drafting a running back. It's never going to happen.
Never doing it again in the first round.
What if you've created a new problem?
I understand what they're saying in the sense of you give them an opportunity to hit free agency a little bit earlier. So instead of working on the back 2 years of a rookie contract, even on a low ball free agent deal will be more than that.
But Jimmy,
I understand that point, but that doesn't solve the problem.
There is an assumption being made by that being the solution that when these players hit the free agent market, that they would get paid a ton of money. I ask you the question, Jamie. I ask this question honestly.
Yeah.
If Saquon Barkley was a free agent, would he command the money that he's attempting to get from the New York Giants?
No.
I don't think the answer to the question is yes.
But what I will say is that, again, if we're trying to find a sliver of positivity in this take, it's that no matter what they get in free agency, it'll probably be a little bit more than what the back 2 years of a standard rookie contract would be. That's the only silver lining. Like, even if they get a $2 million a year deal, right, $4 million, you know what I mean? It'll probably be more than what they would have made back there. So I get that. But again, that only benefits guys that are taken in the middle round.
That
would benefit a guy like Isaiah Pacheco more than it would benefit a guy like Saquon came out.
Did you see Isaiah Pacheco says he thinks he's going to be ready for week one?
Hope so.
Music to our ears. I mean, Jimmy, the other solution to this, and again, this is another thing that I don't think would ever happen. If you were to eliminate the franchise tag and you were to eliminate the transition tag, that's the other element to this, because if there was no franchise tag and there was no transition tag, Saquon Barkley would hit free agency and not have this arbitrary block on him.
Now, I will say this. I do think it would be a good idea for the players to fight against the franchise tag. They never seem too long-term. It gets brought up in a cursory conversation around CBAs, and it never gets taken out.
Right.
Because franchises absolutely want that. It's an unbelievably powerful tool.
It hasn't helped the players. I don't think it's helped
at all. But here's the thing. Do we think Saquon Barkley would make that much more money in the free agency?
No, I don't.
Yes, the issue with Barkley is not that he's not going to get paid well this year. He would get paid pretty well this year. It's just there's no security long term. So, again, it doesn't address the actual issue. Like, that's the thing. I think people are trying to come up with solutions to the auxiliary pieces of the problem without actually addressing the problem, which is only addressed in two fashions. You can make things a little bit better. I think eliminating the franchise tag would be a better move for every single player in the NFL, regardless of position. But the does it change the fact that Chris, this is the inverse, but there's a reason why, we'll talk about the same team, why the Giants paid Daniel Jones $40 million a year. Over 4 years, but really two. But like, but you know what I mean? Like, it's because why? There isn't enough talent at the quarterback position to go around. And the opportunity cost of what they could lose in Daniel Jones in their mind was worth paying that price because they couldn't find an adequate replacement.
I mean, Jamie, the average per year value, and again, Saquon, Tony Pollard, and Josh Jacobs are on 1 year, $10.091 million contracts.
Yeah.
That average per year, and again, it's only 1 year, is sixth highest at the position.
Yeah.
The only players that are in front of that number are Aaron Jones, Nick Chubb, Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, and Christian McCaffrey. Those three guys are being paid in the elite tier of the position. They just want more, and they want more security.
And they want long-term.
Right.
You know, and so I get that. And again, I'm all for players getting their money. Do not misconstrue this argument as being anti-player getting their money.
No.
But the issue here that has to be addressed is a supply and demand issue. And any quote-unquote proposed solution that doesn't take that into account is a waste of time.
Do you have a pen and paper handy?
No.
Because you're gonna probably need one for this next time.
All right, hold on.
Yeah, let me know when you're ready. There's the pen clicking. Okay, I see the pen clicking.
All right, I got it.
You ready?
What am I writing now?
It's take from Bailey. Take. If every division put forward a wide receiver trio for 11 personnel, the AFC East would have the best group with Tyreek, Diggs, and Waddle. And then Bailey proceeded to rank all eight divisions with their groups. So you might need to write some names down here if you
were trying to work this together. All right, so I'm trying to find the best division, and his take is that it's the AFC East.
His take is the AFC East. He has them at number one with Tyreek, Diggs, and Waddle. And again, this is for 11 personnel.
Okay, so three wide, one back, one tight end, three wide receivers. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're doing. Okay, so I guess we'll start with this, Chris. Do you, as an AFC East fan yourself, do you agree with that
theory? I mean, I feel some type of way about Garrett Wilson not being in this group personally. But
I know you do, but I think this is the correct.
But I'm not against this. Okay. I'm able to see the full list that Bailey put together. And
how about you read those names for our users? Because our users that might be like, or our listeners that might be in their car or.
Sure.
I don't know, playing World of Warcraft with this in the background.
So he
like,
has,
might not.
That's a weird crossover, World of Warcraft and Prospects and Props, but it's possible. So here's the order that he has it in. The AFC East with Tyreek Diggs and Waddle number one. The NFC East with A.J. Brown, McLaurin, and CeeDee Lamb at number two. Devonta Smith hate is real. The NFC North at number three with Jefferson, DJ Moore, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Love to see the Amon-Ra St. Brown. At number four, the AFC North, Chase, Higgins, Cooper. The NFC West at five with Metcalf, Debo, and Kupp. The AFC West at six with Adams, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams. The AFC South at seven with Hopkins, Pittman, and Ridley. And the NFC South at the bottom with Evans, Godwin, Olave.
I mean, I do think the AFC East is the best of that bunch.
Yes.
I want to go through these again. So give me the other, because I want to go through division by division and pick our three off the top of our head. Okay. So I agree with the AFC East.
NFC East.
What was the next one?
And AJ Brown, Terry McLaurin, CeeDee Lamb. Get me Devonta Smith in here over Terry McLaurin.
I'm fine with that.
You're fine with
it's close.
The list the way it currently is
with your list
with my change.
With Devonta Smith.
Yeah, Devonta Smith needs to be in.
It's close.
It's close, but I would want Devonta Smith.
Okay.
The NFC North: Jefferson, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think there's anybody else we need to consider.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
The AFC North: Chase, Higgins, Cooper.
What? I'm going to have a hard time arguing that point. I'm just trying to think, is there anybody else? No.
Boyd, any of the Steelers wide receivers?
No, Boyd, Deontay, no. No, that's
Odell Beckham Jr. All right, that's the
Stop
list.
Stop it.
I'm just giving you names in the division, Stop dude. It. Not saying that I agree. The NFC West, Metcalf, Debo, and Kupp.
Okay, this, so I wouldn't have Deebo in there.
Oh, boy. Who are you putting in there? You putting Tyler Lockett in there?
Kupp and Metcalf are for sure.
You putting Tyler Lockett? You putting Hollywood Brown? Because those are your two options.
I'm gonna put I'd put Brandon Ayuk over all of them.
Brandon Ayuk in there over.
I still think Brandon Ayuk's a better wide receiver than Deebo Samuel. I'm gonna be on that list.
I don't think I totally disagree, but okay.
Tyler Lockett would have an argument in there because I think the Lockett versus Ayuk versus Deebo is interesting, but I would put Ayuk in there. I know I'm gonna be on the island with this. I think Deebo Samuel's a fun football player, but it's not as good a receiver as people think.
Are you on the island of relevancy with Brandon Ayuk?
Apparently.
The AFC West. Davante Adams, I think we're okay with.
Yeah, that's the clear, obvious, and no doubter.
No Chiefs on the list I'm okay with as well. Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. Are you going to consider Jerry Jeudy? Are you going to consider Cortland Sutton? Are you going to consider any of the Broncos wide receivers?
No.
This goes back to a take earlier of what we do with health.
Yeah, but it's also like a weirdly like that division's kind of weird with the wide receivers.
It's not a great list. The AFC South, Hopkins, Pittman, and Ridley. Sure. Is there anybody that I would want to take over DeAndre Hopkins? Christian Kirk, maybe?
This is an interesting one. Because you've got Hopkins, you've got Pittman, you've got Ridley, you've got London.
Excuse me? Drake London plays in the NFC South, not the AFC South.
Sorry,
appreciate
NFC
you,
South.
Appreciate you being
AFC South,
show.
Sorry.
The only other name you could consider is Christian Kirk, I think.
I wouldn't put him in over Ridley. I had a Ridley Falcons flashback for a half second there.
Clearly that's what happened there.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
And then the NFC South is Evans, Godwin, and Olave. Drake London. I know you wanted to get him in the other division just so you can have him.
I wouldn't put him in over Olave. I wouldn't put him over Edwin. No, I think I'm fine with that.
Okay, so then there's the list.
All right, so it's a pretty good list.
Pretty good list. This next take from Salim. The NFL should have bird rights. Also, NFL should have some sort of arbitration period, not exactly, but sort of like the NHL's for players who get tagged since it's being misused by teams. So when you tag someone, it's not a 1 year in discard. It keeps the player from hitting free agency while you figure out an extension. If no agreement is reached, a third party comes in and settles on an extension, something like that.
Yeah, no. Here's why. Again, this goes back to the argument I talked about before. And again, they're not that these aren't interesting ideas. They still don't solve the problem. And any ideas that put more gates between players and free agency makes the problem exponentially worse.
So, can I say something?
Sure.
I would much rather the franchise tag system in the NFL operate more like the offer sheet system in the NBA and the NHL.
Yes, but that's technically a restricted free agent system, which I'm fine with.
Right, but and one version of the tag does allow you to go out and get a offer and it be matched by the team. I just think
as we saw with Lamar.
I think overall at the highest level, the top tag option should include you being able to go elsewhere.
Correct. I think that because I would argue that, yes, if you wanted to do something like that, which technically gets a player to a free agency sooner, it's a different type of free agency, but it gets them sooner. But yes, I do think that you should, if you tag a player, again, it still doesn't solve this issue.
But it does, though.
But it would help a little bit.
But I think it does.
Does it?
Because here's why. If, let's use Saquon and the New York Giants. Let's say the Giants placed the tag on Saquon Barkley, but he was still a restricted free agent. And any offer that Saquon Barkley got, the Giants could match, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? I mean, we saw this with Lamar where it didn't necessarily work this way because there was some level of collusion, I think, to not give him a contract.
Well, it's also two first-round picks.
Right.
If that's the competition for running backs, it's not going to change.
It's never going to happen. So it would have to, the scale would have to be a little different. But I do think there would be a team that would offer him a more market-level multi-year contract. And then the Giants can say, oh, you did the work for us. Okay, we'll just match it. And for Saquon, that's a win. He gets his long-term deal, and he doesn't have to fight with the team. Is it always going to work that way? No, it's not going to be perfect.
No, but it still doesn't solve the major issue that we're dealing with here. But I also think you could solve that issue just by eliminating the franchise tag. So
sure, but I think the offer sheet is a way
allows a match. Yeah, first right of refusal.
Well, and it allows the owners and the teams to still feel like they have some level of protection on their own players and trying to keep them in house. Right. I think if you eliminated the franchise tag altogether, I think you would see the teams push back harshly against that.
They won't do it.
Right. An offer sheet, I think, is a good compromise. That's what you have to do in a CBA. You got to compromise. I think that would be a nice compromise that would still keep the integrity of what the system is supposed to be, but give the players a little bit more leverage.
And that would help the tippy top guys, but doesn't solve the overall problem. But yes, it would solve Saquon and Josh Jacobs' problem to at least some extent. My issue is here is that, like, anything that gives more rights to the team to hold you for longer. Now, the one thing that I would be in favor of, and I do like the way in the NHL, and I know Bird Rights kind of operates in this fashion. I'm not as familiar with the NBA cap system as I am with baseball, hockey, and football. But one thing that the NHL did that I thought was a step in the right direction was that if you re-signed with your current team, you were able to offer players an extra year.
Yeah, the Supermax in the NBA.
Now, that won't work in the NFL because teams don't actually necessarily want to give players extra years. That's not what they want. But I do think there should be, if there's something like the Bird Rights where you said that, where it's a...
You can go over the cap. You can go over...
A cap reduction.
Right.
You can go over the re-signing your own players. Mm-hmm. That I would be in favor of.
What if you got like a 5% cap relief for signing a guy that you drafted or something like that?
Yeah, I think that would be incredibly interesting. Because then I think that raises the value of draft picks. It encourages players. Like one thing I don't want is them to have an opportunity to offer you more potential money than somebody else, because then that's, again, screwing with the market a bit. You should be able to have the free market there. But I do like the idea of having a cap refund or something, cap credit.
Yeah.
For lack of a better
phrase. A rebate.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where you could go over the cap an X number of amount based on, like, that would be really interesting. But again, it would help the top guys, but it doesn't solve the overall issue.
Let's take from Taylor.
Because again, that's still a limited amount. And if you're the Giants, you still would have picked Daniel Jones to go over that than you would have picked Saquon.
Correct.
So
it's not a perfect solution, but I think it pushes us in the right direction.
Yes. The NFL can get more creative if they here's the thing, they don't want to.
100%.
If they wanted to pay these guys, they would. They don't.
This take from Taylor B. A good whiteout uniform is better than a good blackout uniform. I don't know if I agree with this.
I don't have a strong opinion on this. A good uniform is a good uniform.
That's also a good take from you. That's a great take.
So, I don't.
We have another take from Bailey here. Take. The Patriots will pick top five. We overrate them last year. The QBs they beat last year were Trubisky, Goff, Brissett, Zach Wilson twice, Colt McCoy, Sam Ehlinger, and Skylar Thompson. With the exception of Goff, who Belichick always makes terrible, no one else starts this year week one. Every other team they played with a projected start of this season, they lost. Add in Aaron Rodgers to the division and naturally getting less lucky playing backups, and they could struggle a lot. Seven of the first eight QBs on the schedule are Allen, Tua twice, Rodgers, Dak, Carr, and Hurts. If they make a slow start, it will get ugly. There are already rumblings of discontent behind the scenes, and the head coach hates the QB. All of it will culminate in a disaster season and a top five pick.
I'm going to sell this. And the logic is reasonable. I will say this. I understand how they get to this solution. I think there's a misunderstanding, in my opinion, of the level of play I think they're going to get from their defense, which has slowly become one of the more unheralded units. I would also argue that while, yes, their wins last year were very unimpressive against an unimpressive group of opponents, they also were having an offense with both hands tied behind their back. And I think that factors in as well. I don't think they're going to be a good team. If you extrapolate this out to picking in the top 10, I would say that's probably more reasonable. But I don't – like, to pick in the top five, like, what was the top five pick this year? Four wins? Five wins?
Yeah, I think so. I'll pull it up just to make sure, but I think six wins got you way outside the top five.
This was the Saints pick, right? That went to the Eagles, or what was the the draft order is just completely blanked.
So the Bears picked one; they had two wins, right?
Yeah.
Houston with their pick didn't have a ton.
Two wins. Well,
Arizona didn't have a ton of wins. Indy didn't have a ton of wins. Seattle from Denver. Denver won five games.
Denver.
So five.
Okay. I mean, so five, that's a 12-loss season.
I don't think it's likely, but it's possible.
I think the Patriots are going to be in that 7-ish win range.
I think that's fair.
I think they're 7-10-ish team.
We've got two more takes here on the show. This take from Cryptic Slow. Take. Justin Fields has declared he will be the first Bear to pass 4,000 passing yards in a season this year. And if he does not, it is fair to call him a bust.
Ooh, okay. There's two different takes.
A lot going on there.
The first one, he's not throwing for 4,000 yards.
I'll take the under on 4,000 passing yards.
I appreciate his zeal and his confidence.
That's a nice word.
But I don't think the offense is set up in a way for him to do that.
You know my thoughts on their offense.
I don't think him not getting 4,000 yards makes him a bust, though. I think that's a too binary of a yes-no answer there. I have to see him this year. There's a lot of things I need to see from him as a passer, as an overall quarterback, as an operator of the offense. Those are the things I need to see. I don't anticipate we're going to be able to declare him a bust after this year, but I think we're going to have a strong lean one way or the other. But I don't think that the arbitrary mark of – like, he doesn't have to throw for 4,000 yards to impress me this year. I don't think that benchmark where you say that's not that many yards, but it could be for that offense. This is going to be more of an eye test season for me, because I think people did the opposite last year, that they didn't actually look at what was happening in the field. They saw the crazy rushing numbers and they declared him the next big thing. And by the way, I will mention this, big Justin Fields fan. He was my QB2 of that draft coming out behind Trevor Lawrence. So I'm not a Justin Fields hater. I just feel like the pendulum has swung completely to the other side here for really no discernible reason. And I think this is going to be – I am treating this year for Justin Fields a lot like we treated last year for Tua. I feel the same way about coming in, where we saw flashes of things we liked, but there were a lot of things that had to happen. And he got a shiny new wide receiver to add to the roster to help make things better. In this case, it's the second year with a new coach, not a first year with a new coach like it was for Tua last year. But like, I kind of feel like we're on the fence. Like, I can go either way with him, but I'm going to need 17 games to make this determination. I am not ready to declare it one way or the other. And there's not a specific statistical goal that I need to see from him.
Last take here from Sam Teets. Take, the Commanders should rebrand as the Washington Wild/Warhawks. He says pick one, Wild or War, to pay homage to their famous offensive line.
I do think something Hogs related would be.
And they're going to change their name again,
a
right?
A smart move.
That's all, yeah, all but confirmed. Like,
yeah, they're going to absolutely do
it. I know they said that everything's on the table and we'll think about it. That's like code word for we're changing the name.
They're doing it. It's one. I know you talked about it in TD and Daily today where you were like, you know, it eliminates all of the damn stuff. But quite frankly, there's an economic play too. It's an influx of money.
Dollars. Lots of merchandise.
Team rebrands, a lot of dollars come in. I do think I'm not good at naming things. I'll admit that. So I don't have like a thing off the top of my head. But I do.
Just seen how long it took us to come up with a name for this show.
I know, good Lord. But I do think something that pays homage to the Hogs would make a lot of sense. And I do think the color should stay. The burgundy and gold should stay.
Yeah, good with that.
Any other combination, I'm fine with at this point. To me, is the something that the fans and the community gravitate toward. It's not for me.
Right.
Exactly. I'm not a Washington Football Team Commanders fan. So it doesn't matter to me what they name it. If the community likes it, usually anything that pays homage to better times and a tradition usually gets liked by the fans. So that would be – so I like this take. But I will defer to those in the DMV to make that call.
It's going to do it for us here on this edition of the show. Another week of shows in the books. We got fun ones for you next week. We got a tight end show to kick off the week. We're going to do some news and notes stuff next week, share our thoughts on some of the big stories. Ahead of training camp starting, so a lot of fun stuff coming to you guys next week here on the podcast. Also some QB interception props as well. But in the meantime, please rate, review, subscribe to the podcast, share the show. We greatly do appreciate it. We've got the video version of the show available over on the Draft Network YouTube channel. Go over there, interact with everything. We greatly do appreciate it. That's going to do it for us here on this edition of the show. Hope you all have a great weekend. Talk to y'all on Monday.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable, but the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.